From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made about 5 years ago, the first time we talked about Bitcoin on this program. At the time, one Bitcoin was selling for about $3,000, and for those of us who were interested, it looked like, well, there was a missing of a window for some serious upside in value. Well, 5 years later, one Bitcoin is selling for $55,000. It's gone as high as $64,000. This past December, Bitcoin was down around $10,000. There's just no way to predict whether it will collapse or continue on this meteoric rise. But cryptocurrency has expanded well beyond Bitcoin. There are countless forms of it, from Ether to Zcash to the new Dogecoin and many, many more. The last 6 months has seen a crypto explosion, and now Elon Musk has become one of its biggest evangelists. Some nonprofits are trying to leverage cryptocurrency for social good, building projects around the world, funded by Bitcoin and the like. But wait a minute, maybe you saw Bill Maher this past weekend hammering cryptocurrency as fraudulent at best and potentially a serious social harm. That's because the most popular crypto, Bitcoin, requires a form of digital mining that uses a large amount of energy. And now the Seneca Lake Guardian has taken up the cause of shutting down a Bitcoin mining operation that has sprung up in the town of Dresden. That plant has thousands of machines cranking away trying to solve Bitcoin equations, and climate activists are pointing out the environmental impact. They are calling for a ban, just as some governments in other countries are doing the same. So how do we make sense of this moment for cryptocurrency? What questions do you feel like you need answered? Our guests this hour have a lot to say, and let me welcome them now. Gary Palmer is the owner and CEO of Minting Coins at mintingcoins.com. Gary, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Evan. Happy to be here.
James Harrington is CEO and founder of the Ugandan Water Project. Hi, James. Welcome back to you.
Hey, Evan. Good to be with you as well.
Yvonne Taylor is the co-founder and vice president of the Seneca Lake Guardian. Hi, Yvonne. Thanks for making time.
Hello, Evan. Thanks for having me.
And welcome to Vinny Aliperti, who is the owner of Billsboro Winery on Seneca Lake. Hi, Vinny. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Evan. Thank you.
I want to start just by, you know, listening to some of what did go viral this past weekend. And sometimes this is how people get introduced to things that are new. A viral clip. And Bill Maher did about 8 minutes on Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, and he was not charitable. I think we've pulled a clip that is profanity-free. It's HBO. It's Bill Maher. But here is his complaint about what he calls the fraudulent cryptocurrency.
Do I need to spell this out? There is something inherently not credible about creating hundreds of billions in virtual wealth with nothing ever actually being accomplished and no actual product made or service rendered. It's like Tinkerbell's light. Its power source is based solely on enough children believing in it. And unfortunately, what is real is the unfathomable amount of electricity those massive supercomputers suck up for their mining. The power, listen to this, the power being used right now to guess numbers and win imaginary prizes is the same as all the electricity needed to light all of New York State, except the governor's office where they use romantic candles. Bitcoin uses more electricity per transaction than any other method known to mankind. Just one uses more energy than a million Visa transactions and has the same carbon footprint as 85,000 hours of watching YouTube, what a 15-year-old calls the weekend. Bitcoin uses more energy than Netflix, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, and Google combined. I mean, cars are bad for the climate, but at least they take you somewhere.
So that concern that Bill Maher is expressing, it really comes down to two things, and we're going to talk about both, because one of his complaints is that cryptocurrency doesn't create anything. It is essentially invented, and it's created value out of thin air. One of the things we'll talk about, and that Gary has talked about in the past, is that cryptocurrency is in part a kind of hedge against what its advocates feel like is a possible collapse or an eroding of trust in government-backed currency. And we'll talk about that coming up here. But he's also talking about the energy costs. And Yvonne Taylor, let me start with you as the vice president of the Seneca Lake Guardian. You know, there's a plant down in Dresden that people have probably driven by and seen. They may not know what's happening there. Why don't you do your best to explain what is happening there and what your group wants to do about that?
Okay, sure. So that plant was an old coal-fired burning plant years ago that was mothballed for quite some time. And then it was reopened, purchased by another corporation, received a $2 million economic development grant from the state to transition from coal to burning natural gas. But in the beginning, they only were going to operate in times of high demand to provide power to the public in times of need. And so they were only going to be operating at about 6% capacity, which didn't seem like a whole heck of a lot. But then this company discovered that that was not profitable, and they started to install Bitcoin mining machines. When they did, their air emissions increased tenfold. And there's a lot of water withdrawal issues and discharge thermal pollution issues that we're also concerned about. And Greenwich, you know, this is only at 13% capacity currently, with the anticipation of going to 100% capacity. Earth Justice, the environmental law firm, expanded out their air emissions. If they operated at 100% capacity, their air emissions will be over 1 million tons of CO2 equivalents into the atmosphere every year. So we've got a lot of concerns about that.
What do you want to do about it?
Well, we would like, honestly, to preserve the vibrant agricultural and tourism-based economy in the Finger Lakes region, support the wine and tourism industry that generates $3 billion into New York's economy annually and supports 58,000 jobs. As opposed to supporting a corporation that, you know, overall will not provide a large number of jobs since the machines are fully automated and will, you know, really threaten and jeopardize that economy that I just mentioned. So we would like Greenwich to at least stop its expansion, if not find another form of cryptocurrency that doesn't require so much energy.
Okay, but Yvonne, you know, when you look around the world, there are parts of India, China, there are calls in this country for the Biden administration to become more aggressive in a regulatory sense toward cryptocurrency. At the same time, the Elon Musk of the world are touting it. So you've got these competing forces. And I'm curious to know if you endorse any particular form of legislation that would address this?
Yes, absolutely, we do. I think New York State needs to take a pause on Bitcoin mining until we can do a comprehensive review of the air and water impacts of this type of industry. There is a bill that has been introduced. It's S-6486. Or A7389, which would do just that. It would establish a moratorium. And we feel also that if Governor Cuomo really wants to be a leader on climate in New York, you know, he has to evaluate the impact that cryptocurrency mining will have on this initiative. It flies in the face of the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, which is a law that was established in 2019 to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and make New York State a leader on climate. And all of those goals would be undermined if we leave cryptocurrency mining unchecked.
And briefly, Yvonne, is there any momentum legislatively to do this? What do you know about where lawmakers are?
Well, that's where we're trying to focus our efforts currently. We do have some support growing for this as people learn about this relatively new and somewhat complicated industry. Currently, we are working very diligently to educate and inform not only lawmakers, but also, you know, the the stakeholders in the Finger Lakes region and beyond. I mean, this is not just the Finger Lakes issue, as you just pointed out. It's a New York State issue with other facilities being started in North Tonawanda. They're looking for Bitcoin potential in Watkins Glen as we speak. We need to get in front of this. I'll be honest with you, it reminds me a whole heck of a lot of fracking when it first came in. You have these slick corporations coming into the small towns, waving dollar signs and making lots of promises, and it really should not be a town-by-town fight. New York State desperately needs to adopt some regulation over Bitcoin, as does the federal government.
Vinny Aliperti is the owner of Billsboro Winery, which is a few miles up Seneca Lake from that Dresden plant, and it's one of the many really special places on the lake. I happen to know Vinny is a very smart guy. Vinny, you're smarter than me, and people like Gary Palmer, I'll talk to in a moment, over the years have tried to help me understand Bitcoin and crypto generally. Do you feel like you understand what's going on? And I'm not trying to like sort of condescend here. I'm serious when I say, Yvonne's right. This is a complex process, the notion of Bitcoin mining. Yeah. Do you feel like you understand it pretty well now, Vinny? And do you feel like the public understands it? What do you think?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, obviously it's a very complex, math. Yes, of course you have to understand what's going on, but I think it's pretty obvious, as Yvonne mentioned, how intensive the industry is. I mean, to me, that's the most important part. Whether, I understand what blockchains are or all the different types of transactions. I think what we need to understand is the impact on the environment. And on the wine industry, as you well know, is a hugely important part of the Central New York economy. And while this impacts us, on Seneca Lake, whether it's because of the thermal pollution and the increase of algae blooms, or just the immense amount of emissions that, of course, are going to contribute to already, a compromised climate and exacerbating the climate crisis as it is, regionally, globally. Those are the issues that are really concerning me and the wine industry as a whole and all our peripheral, industries that extend outward from the wine industry, in the whole craft beverage industry. So as far as the public's awareness of the issue, it's definitely one of these sort of esoteric and I think kind of opaque, business models, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's going anywhere. And as Yvonne mentioned, we just need to get ahead of it before it gets out of control.
Mm. Gary Palmer, you've heard the complaints here. I'd love to know what you think about the requirements for Bitcoin from an energy standpoint and your views of sort of where crypto is as a whole. Go ahead, Gary.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Evan. And Yvonne, Vinny, thank you very much for what you're saying, because I can really appreciate what our community means to us and what the community likely means to you. And everyone listening, you have to ask yourself, you have to look around and reflect, are we in a time of great change? Because I think that we are. And what's happening with the revolution of this new technology, not just blockchain, but machine learning, what people are calling AI, Internet of Things technology, a lot is coming together at this very special moment in time. And this is what some people are referring to as a once-in-a-100-year opportunity. A lot of people are feeling uncertain about the current world, the current environment, all the crazy things that are happening. And we're seeing this, in my opinion, reflected in things like GameStop stock and Dogecoin. It's an indication that the message of the memes is just simply more influential for all the people coming together than the messages that we're hearing from centralized institutions, because a lot of people don't, feel from the people that I'm talking to, the connection with the institutions that are, currently serving them. And so they're looking at this new technology and the communities that come with this new technology that people are connecting with. And what I'm my message to all the people of our area, my goal, my message is that crypto Bitcoin will grow. It's going to continue to grow. Absent, a very unlikely event, as unlikely as a meteor strike, wiping out the dinosaurs, this is going to continue to increase. And my goal is to bring the benefits and the lifts of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology to Rochester, New York, to Western New York, to everyone in the greater Rochester area. Because in terms of energy, the fact of the matter is that this is not fracking. But nevertheless, it is a very important question for all of our communities to ask, what does the community get? Because the cryptocurrency mining, Bitcoin in particular, is bringing a lot of benefits, and the communities should, receive some of those benefits because of the give and take of what's happening, with the energy consumption, which I'll get into. But we have to recognize that with Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, this isn't a regional thing or a national thing. This is a global world market for people and for technology, for people in Rochester, to people in Uganda. This is a worldwide opportunity. And all of this cryptocurrency is going to become, especially the good stuff, it's going to become more scarce. It's going to maintain its relevancy. And if more people in our local area have access to Bitcoin and Ethereum and these decentralized cryptocurrencies, if more people locally have a Bitcoin wallet and we're able to partake in this technology, it's going to bring great strength and great opportunity to our economic development, our technological development, our local culture. What I can tell you, go on.
Well, I just want to jump in on a couple of points here, because in a moment I do want to ask you about how you view the environmental impact. And then I want to get James's take as well, which I think is fascinating on this. But a couple points here, Gary. First of all, on this program a number of years ago, you were confidently predicting that cryptocurrency would essentially, the blockchain would be replacing fiat currency within a short number of years. I think we can now say that's not, first of all, it hasn't happened. It's not close to happening. And cryptocurrency remains more of an asset class than an actual used form of currency. Doesn't, at least at this moment, is it not more of an asset class than actual used currency?
I would say it's a spectrum, and I would push back and just say that it's definitively, empirically, quantitatively not true, because with Bitcoin and with Ethereum and with decentralized finance, there's people who are, they have banking, they have lending, they have everything, they have a certificate of deposits. Like everything that you could get at a bank, you can also get in a decentralized financial situation without any, centralized third party middleman, where you have total control of, your wealth, no matter if it's hundreds of dollars or billions of dollars. You can transact that on the blockchain, deposit it on the blockchain, loan against it, take deposit. You could do everything, right? And it's not that the system has been, it's not that the old system has been removed, because the goal of the new system isn't to destroy the old system. The goal of the new system is to simply build something better that provides more equity and provable, fair rules that everybody can view, that everybody can partake in. Where there's fewer no secrets, because everything is publicly verifiable on a decentralized blockchain.
So not just an asset class in your mind. I get that. And in some sense, what I'm going to ask you is unfair here, because whenever there's a new invention or a new idea that is aimed at becoming an egalitarian tool, it may not be that way right out of the gates, and it can be hard to see where something is going. But at the moment, it is not very egalitarian, is it? I mean, how many people can actually access any form of cryptocurrency? How many are actually using it? And how many feel like it's for the masses? You talk about this way of revolutionizing currency for the masses. Right now, it is largely not for the masses, unless I'm missing something.
I mean, a lot of people, they know they have a problem, and they don't know that there's a solution for it. And a lot of people don't know that they have a problem, let alone that they have a solution for it. And it's not really, obvious for a lot of people, but anyone that has a cell phone can access Bitcoin and Ethereum and decentralized cryptocurrency and NFTs without permission, no matter what your age or sex or where you live in the world, because this technology is borderless and immutable and permissionless, and anybody can partake in the culture or the development. You know, and if we think about it, you know, if I asked you when IBM was founded, you know, you may or may not be shocked to know that IBM was founded in 1845. And from 1845 to, you know, beyond, you know, to let's say the 60s and 70s, you know, they're building things and they're building technology and they're, you know, and a little bit of code in there. And people are developing objects. And then, you know, from the 70s and afterward, you have Microsoft founded 1975. And then Microsoft is developing software, and you have all these people who are developing technology being replaced by people who are developing this invisible code that's literally changing the world. And then we have the internet that nobody believed in. Even in 2005, people weren't, you know, it was
all
like
right. So you're saying it's coming. You're saying it's coming. I mean,
not only is it coming, but it's already here. And we have to realize that the concerns that we have about the energy, although, you know, they are founded, and the questions that we're asking are good questions. The amount of energy that Bitcoin currently uses now is 110 terawatts of energy per year, which is about a half of 1% of the global energy supply.
But you want it to grow. You want crypto to grow. So you can say where it is now, but where are we going with this? And is this a sustainable energy output?
Absolutely, because where we're going with this is that there is major research being done by companies like Square, companies like ARK Invest, you know, the ARK Invest team, and are looking at Bitcoin as a key driver of a renewables energy future, because solar and wind produce cheaper energy than fossil fuels. And because of this, you know, people think that batteries can fix this, but it's alone, it's not economically enough. So what can fix this problem is an ecosystem where solar and wind and batteries and Bitcoin mining coexist to form a green grid that runs almost exclusively on renewable energy. And not only is this doable, but this is doable growing the industry and creating, you know, I don't want it to sound like this is too much fluff, and it sounds kind of crazy, but a worldwide marketplace for energy consumption that will be primarily based on renewable green energy. And what my argument is here, you know, is like Bitcoin is leading the way for a renewable green energy grid. And we see companies like EnergyWeb and the EnergyWeb Foundation, which, you know, is doing a lot of great work globally and out of Denver and working with global companies to really put this together. And again, this is backed up by Square and ARK Invest, you know, for all the financial people in the world. You can go read the ARK Invest and Square white paper at, you know, squ.re/BCI or BCEI-white paper. I can get that out on my Twitter account for people as well.
All right, but one more thing here.
It's amazing what's happening.
One more thing here, Gary. So if what you're saying is right, and I'm leaving the space because what I appreciate is you're not sitting here saying Yvonne and Vinny are wrong. You're not saying that they're making up numbers or that they just don't get it. You're saying, yes, the energy output is significant. It's real, but
I'm saying it's a half of 1%.
Okay. No. I understand.
So I wouldn't say significant, but
okay.
No.
Okay. But do you support then saying, hey, let's not do this in Dresden. Let's not do this in certain places. And let's only do this when we can utilize greener sources of energy to do it. Do you support that?
So my opinion on the situation is that if we make laws that prevent these organizations from doing Bitcoin mining locally, then other jurisdictions are more than happy to take that business. And if they take that business, then we are just going to get degrees of magnitude less benefit. And so I would push away from doing anything too drastic. But then in line with what Yvonne and what Vinny are saying, I would encourage benefits for the community. I would encourage like a revenue share, right? Like if there was a revenue share of Bitcoin that was being generated output and then a percentage of that going into the community, then if the community was to save that Bitcoin that was part of their revenue share, and then if what I'm saying is true and Bitcoin 10x's again, and then 10x's again after that, and I know it's crazy for everyone on this phone to hear this, but I believe, and people like me believe, that Bitcoin will go to $1 million, it will surpass $1 million, it will go up, it will go down, but the trend, if we zoom way out, the trend is that Bitcoin is going up, especially, you know, in the new economic reality that we're living in.
But I don't get, this is what I don't get, and this is where Yvonne's comparison to fracking does sort of ring true for me. When you say, look, if we don't do this here, somebody else is going to do this. That is what they said about fracking. That also was true. I mean, there, you know, the Marcellus Shale, for example, there will be places where it's allowed, there will be places where it's not, and fracking companies can say, okay, Southern Tier, okay, Finger Lakes, we're not going to do it there. We're going to Pennsylvania. We're going elsewhere. I get that. And I get the argument that some people made that, hey, if we don't do it here, we lose the jobs, we lose some of the economic benefits. I could at least understand that argument. What I don't understand is, why do you have to do Bitcoin here? Because it's not like mining them in Dresden means that people in Dresden get Bitcoin. There are no jobs being made out of this. Why not just say, hey, not here, do it elsewhere. Bitcoin, as you predict, will continue to grow anyway. Why do it here?
Well, I mean, the thing that I just made up is that you could have a savvy community leader say, hey, you can do Bitcoin here and let's do a revenue share.
But we get part of it. Okay, you're saying
I'm making up stuff on the fly. I'm throwing against the wall, and I'm just saying, hey, if we do a revenue share, it's like they pay their taxes. You know, they're only going to create so many jobs.
Yeah.
But this isn't about the jobs, you know, necessarily directly. This is about the network effects of local people being involved in this technology, having this technology, and the rising tide is going to raise all ships.
Okay.
If everybody in Rochester, do a thought experiment. If everybody in Rochester had $100 in Bitcoin, right? When last time we talked about this, you know, in 2020, whatever it was, if they had $100 in Bitcoin today, they would have like $5,000 in Bitcoin. If everybody in Rochester had $5,000 extra in Bitcoin, that'd be a huge economic lift. And what I'm saying is that we are in the very early innings, right? We are not like at the end of the show. Like we're in the middle of a bull market, and at some point the bull market's going to come down. I don't know how much higher it's going to go. I don't know how low it's going to go after it comes down. But what I'm personally confident, not financial advice, is that as it goes up and down, like Bitcoin is going to continue increasing, Ethereum is going to continue increasing. There are these other technologies that are revolutionary. These other technologies that don't use the energy, like Ethereum, for example, is moving to, which is a different cryptocurrency. The Ethereum cryptocurrency is moving to away from proof of work, which uses energy, is moving to proof of stake, which doesn't use energy. And then those jobs don't have to use our, you know, areas to exist, right? The Bitcoin is an opportunity for us to be part of this community. I'm not saying let them come in here and throw sludge in the lakes, right? And like burn down all of our vineyards. I'm saying let's make sure that the economic impact is not damaging, in a way that's horrific.
Okay.
But the total amount of energy being used by Bitcoin is not a lot, and this is just a major, beautiful, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, which the greater Rochester area would just benefit by degrees of magnitude, and I just want to see it happen.
All right. So let me just ask Yvonne, what do you think, Yvonne? Is there a way to do this and share the benefit locally the way Gary's describing?
I'm so glad you asked, Evan. Part of the Bill Maher skit that you didn't play says that people pushing Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency are money-hungry opportunists, and they're not allowed to pretend that they care about the environment. He also mentioned that the journal Nature cited Bitcoin's growth as being responsible for single-handedly pushing global temperatures above the tipping point of 2 degrees Celsius. I know that your guest said, well, we can rely on the renewable green energy grid. That would be a welcome change, but that is not happening now. What they're doing is they're using old fossil fuel burning plants that should be decommissioned and powered down. There's a letter from Earth Justice to the Department of Environmental Conservation that lists 30 power plants in New York that could be repurposed to mine Bitcoin. Any of this doesn't address the the intensive water consumption of these power plants. We absolutely must factor that in. Power plants use billions of gallons of water every year. When your guest mentioned revenue sharing into the community, I want to remind people of what is going on in Seneca Falls and its addiction to the money that's coming in from Seneca Meadows landfill. It's polluting the community. The community can't even go outdoors and enjoy the fresh air, but they're having a difficult time separating themselves from the money that is going into that community from that polluting industry.
So no deal.
We don't
no money deal. Yeah,
finger
okay, finger. I hear you. So no deal, no money deal. Yeah.
We need to take a pause. We need to do some studies, just like we did with fracking. And we need to also evaluate the risk versus reward, the cost to human health from air particulates from these facilities, the cost to the climate, and the jobs that could be lost in the area. Rochester is part of the Finger Lakes. You know, let's rely on our vibrant and healthy environment to bring in money. That's where the dollars are.
All right.
Not this Ponzi scheme.
James Harrington's been so patient.
Evan, if I could just, if I could just
hold on, Gary.
Just give me a chance.
Hold on. Oh, I wish we had 2 hours, everybody. James has been so patient. I have to take our only break. We're going to come back, and I want to bring in James Harrington, who's the CEO and founder of the Ugandan Water Project, who I know has a lot of thoughts on his own about how they've utilized crypto and some of their work and maybe how he sees this debate about what's good for the environment. I mean, it's called the Ugandan Water Project. I'm very curious to hear James's thoughts. But you've heard Yvonne Taylor, who is the co-founder and vice president of the Seneca Lake Guardian, say, no deal. We don't want money. We don't want a Bitcoin sharing to allow for thousands of machines to do the mining, which I know sounds confusing. Listeners have been saying, what are you talking about with mining? It's not physical mining. It's not, you know, picks in the stones. It is digital mining. It uses a lot of energy output to use these equations to create new digital coins. And that's what we're talking about. Cryptocurrency is essentially digital money. There's lots of forms of it. And in Dresden on Seneca Lake, that old coal plant is now using machines to mine Bitcoin. And so the Seneca Lake Guardian is saying, no, let's not do this. It's polluting. It uses water. It has a huge energy output. And let's use regulation to stop this. Yvonne is with us. Vinny Aliperti is the owner of Billsboro Winery on Seneca Lake. Gary Palmer, the owner and CEO of Minting Coins. And when we come back, we're going to talk to James Harrington about his thoughts after this only break. Coming up in our second hour, do you consider being weird to be a strength? Or is it a problem? Is it difficult? Do you consider yourself weird? It can be difficult for those who don't conform to social norms. Author and journalist Olga Hazan's new book is called Weird, The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider's World. And we're going to talk to her about the book and the ways to leverage your strength in weirdness next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I first met James Harrington a few years back. He's the CEO and founder of the Ugandan Water Project. And I didn't expect the next time we talked to be about cryptocurrency, but James reached out, and I'm glad you did, James. Why don't you remind listeners what the Ugandan Water Project is first?
Yeah, we're based right here in the Rochester area, and we are raising funds to implement community-based water systems for rural communities across Uganda. We've been doing that for about 14 years, and we work all over the place in this region to help mobilize the values and resources of our community to help save lives through clean water. We're currently serving in over 800, actually almost 900 communities in East Africa in the country of Uganda.
You wrote to me recently, quote, today we pulled the trigger on 25 water projects in Uganda funded all by crypto donations, most of them anonymous. How did this start to happen? And what is your view on this debate about whether crypto is sort of a social good or a social negative, James?
Yeah, great question, because I suspect that if Yvonne and Gary decided to adopt a child together, it might be me. You know, it was during 2020 as we were, as an organization, trying to adapt to the very volatile landscape with COVID, trying to figure out how we move forward and continue to be on mission as an organization. We were looking at, hey, where can we identify new groups of donors that are looking to engage? And we began reaching out on Twitter and some other social media to identify, hey, are there cryptocurrency users in this new economy that are interested in aligning the values that drove them to cryptocurrency around some of the things we do, being ultra transparent with the work that we are funding and implementing in Uganda. And we found that there was very much there was interest among those users, and they really loved the fact that we can work very quickly as an organization, that we provide live transparent data, and that aligns with the way that cryptocurrency users kind of do things. And when we began to put that infrastructure in place, we started to see a trickle at first, but lately it's been, for our size organization, we've seen some really extreme generosity on behalf of people that are donating, you know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and a whole bunch of stuff that you don't even know, you know, other cryptocurrencies out there that you might not have heard of. So it's been exciting.
Okay. And are you concerned with the energy output to create, you know, to mine individual Bitcoins? And I know, again, I know this is complicated. My understanding years ago was there was something like 20, 21 million or 11 million, 21 million total Bitcoins possible in existence. And the more that were mined, the more complicated the equations get, the more output, the more output that these machines have to do to successfully mine the coins. And the concern is the longer we go, the more energy output we're going to have here, sort of ad infinitum. Are you worried about that, James?
Yeah, so if nothing was going to change, then I would be very concerned, and I would have a growing concern, because I think, like Yvonne, we cannot turn away from the environmental impact of the energy consumption. One of the encouraging things that hasn't really been talked about, I mean, Gary alluded to it, is the way cryptocurrencies are structured is changing dramatically. And so the high energy consumption of what they call proof of work, which is what Bitcoin and Ethereum and some of the older currencies are based on, that's where it really grinds out the power consumption. However, that cost isn't just environmental. There is an actual financial cost to the network of users. They call those gas fees. I don't want to get too stuck in the weeds on terminology, but basically there's a higher increasing cost. And that's driving the market of users and of cryptocurrency to look for proof of stake currencies that are more efficient. And so I think that the future of cryptocurrency will, the market itself is going to drive towards a lower impact, lower cost way of building the cryptocurrency world. So while I definitely am concerned, I'm encouraged to see that there's a lot of pressures. And I think Yvonne's pressure is a healthy kind of pressure, but I also think there's market pressures that are going to open up things like XRP and on the Ripple network and things like that, that are going to solve a real problem at a much lower cost financially and a much lower cost environmentally. And that is where I get really excited about the future.
Well, so I want to hit a couple of points that you're making here. So first of all, when you talk about efficiency and really sort of a future of cryptocurrency that is not just an asset class, but really an efficient way to do things, if that were the case right now, I'm going to be very careful in putting my lay credentials on the table, but everything that I read tells me that Bitcoin Cash, which spun off of the original Bitcoin, is a more efficient product or crypto or currency and a better way to do things than Bitcoin. But Bitcoin Cash is about $1,400 for an individual unit, $55,000 for Bitcoin. Why? If it's not an asset class, it's not just people bidding on something sort of ethereal that this is actually going to be used, why isn't it moving in the direction of rewarding those that are better currencies, James?
Yeah, I think there's just there's a bit of a lag as the general populace exposes themselves and educates themselves. You know, I think that there is a lot of hype that is driving people into the cryptocurrency space. And so, you know, when you have a conversation, I know people that the only reason they bought any Bitcoin is because, you know, like we said earlier, you know, Elon Musk said it was a good idea. And that doesn't represent a very informed investor or user. So I think that part of what you're seeing is just the learning curve of the general consumer. However, if you get beyond consumer, you brought up earlier, like, is it an asset class? Is it a currency? I would say consumers are not going out and buying a pack of gum with cryptocurrency, but the way that many businesses use currencies, you're seeing a huge transition here in the States as well as internationally of companies saying our strategic cash holdings, we're moving them from fiat, from U.S. dollars to something different. We're switching some of those holdings to cryptocurrencies because they're concerned about inflation. Our charity did that. Our charity, local organization, the Ugandan Water Project, we have had some long-term savings in things like in cash, also in mutual funds. And now we actually have more of our strategic, you know, emergency fund in cryptocurrencies because it's just a good way to lead an organization in this day and age. So I think we are seeing some of that among informed users of cryptocurrency.
Two more things with you, James, and I want to bring Vinny and Yvonne back in here. But when it comes to understanding the energy output here, there's a lot of attention, understandably so, on Bitcoin itself, but that is one of many, many forms of crypto. And listeners are asking, do they all need mining like this? What's the answer, James?
The simple answer is no, they don't all need to get mined. And that's why I'm more optimistic about the future of cryptocurrency as a whole, even though I'm not overly optimistic about Bitcoin specifically.
Okay, so can't we just jettison those that don't need to crank up these machines and do all of this output? Am I being naive, James?
I think we're going to see a transition. I don't know if anybody's going to jettison them, but I do think we're going to see a transition. The picture in my mind, which I think is relevant to our region, is Edison and Tesla, right? Edison was the father of electricity in so many ways, and yet his DC power was so limited in other ways. And when Tesla came along, his previous protege, with alternating current, eventually it eclipsed and really displaced DC. I think we're going to see a similar shift in the cryptocurrency space, and I'm excited because it really is going to impact not just weird people who are doing mining in some basement by the glow of a monitor. I think we're going to see, just like we are with our organization, we're going to see the power of this new economy helping to save and transform lives for vulnerable communities all over the world.
Okay. And then I am curious to know then if, for the moment, you agree with Yvonne and Vinny and the Seneca Lake Guardian saying that you like the overall direction of crypto, you see the benefits, it's helping fund projects for the Ugandan Water Project, but you understand why a community might say, not here, not right now, let's do it differently, let's do it somewhere else, and do you support a ban there?
I understand their concerns. I suspect, I'm a pragmatist. I suspect that at the speed that it requires to change something that they're talking about, that we'll actually see the market produce significant pressure to lead it in a different direction just because of what I referred to earlier, the rising gas fees for operating on those networks. I don't think they should stop. I think their advocacy is powerful. However, I do think that there's going to be some other pressures that are going to be a productive force that'll drive us away from seeing an overinvestment in some of this polluting form of mining.
Okay. Let me ask Vinny Aliperti, when you think about, when we all try to get our heads around cryptocurrency, Vinny's the owner of Billsboro Winery on Seneca Lake, who is joining in some of the efforts to slow or stop what's happening in the mining operation there in Dresden, and right there in the middle of Seneca Lake. Vinny, when you think about cryptocurrency, I mean, the whole philosophical, kind of discussion about whether we can trust fiat currency, whether we need different forms of currency, is its own separate thing. And interesting enough. But is it your view that for the moment, it's not about the philosophy of fiat currency? It's about, if you're going to do it, don't do it in a way that requires this mining and energy output. Find another way.
Right. I mean, of course, you put your finger on it. Yeah. I mean, and it's been quite fascinating, frankly, listening to this, because it is a very complicated and complex world, and I think this only supports our position that the state and frankly the federal government needs to put the guardrails on this and hit pause. There's probably more questions than answers, and we what we know now, I mean, is enough, frankly, to move our industry in opposing these projects. We already know this particular project on Seneca Lake, which is really the focus of my efforts and Yvonne's, is having a detrimental effect. It will have a detrimental effect. It is having a detrimental effect on lake water, and Gary is sort of very, very aware of water quality in his work. Water quality is a major issue in the Finger Lakes, and it's only going in the wrong direction. So, a project like this is just not good news for water quality, not good news for agriculture in general, whether it's local or global. I mean, as we know, emissions have no boundaries. So I'm heartened to hear that there are possibly some greener, less polluting cryptocurrencies out there, and I'm hoping that is the way this is all going. But we can't wait for that day to come. So we have to push from our end, and hopefully the market cooperates and we can resolve this. But we're not going to sit on our hands and wait. That's for sure.
Okay, Yvonne, anything from that James was discussing move you in a direction that says we're going to keep our advocacy, but you know, does it move you off the position that you want to see this ban happen right now?
Not exactly, but I do think that James is right, that anybody who's touting Bitcoin as a panacea to the financial industry needs to get informed, because quite frankly, burning more fossil fuel right now to make fake money in the middle of climate change is literally insane. We're not against cryptocurrency in general. There is a form of cryptocurrency called Nano that uses 1/6 millionth of the amount of energy compared to Bitcoin. We're not anti-technology, we're not anti-data, we're not anti-cryptocurrency, but this is a cautionary tale. Just like fracking came in, we need to evaluate the impacts of the industry. I'm all about raising funds for nonprofit organizations, but we were asked if we would accept Bitcoin for donations, and quite frankly, being an environmental organization, it would be very disingenuous of us to accept something that is such a climate and water buster. We need to start putting our money where our mouths are, and do what's right for the whole planet and for future generations.
Gary,
that's where it's at.
Gary, how about Nano?
Evan?
Oh yeah, go ahead, James. Go ahead. How about Nano?
Sure. So, well, I was just going to say what Yvonne just said about the impact to the environment. I think we need to make examined choices like that. And I think that was probably a good choice for her not to accept those donations. But the reality is, when just a couple of weeks ago, we anonymously received a 1 Bitcoin donation, we turned that around, and that's going to provide safe water for about 3,400 people in Uganda in the next 60 days. And those are currently people who are burning fossil fuel over simple fires to cook their food and to boil water. And so, ironically, it's actually a good environmental move for us to be able to reduce that amount of burning fuel, burning carbon-based fuels, and helping to improve the health of the people in Uganda. So it is interesting how, for her, that was a good move to say, hey, we got to stand on our principles and not just accept the donation. For us, ironically, it actually is a good environmental and human move to turn that right around and have a impact on health and stability, the local economies, and the environment in Uganda.
Gary, what do you think about Nano as a coin?
Evan, first I got to say to Yvonne and to everybody, in terms of this specific situation with the coal fire plant, I really can't speak to that. My comments have been in regard to New York State and what this means for the economics and the network effects of our region. And I would agree with Yvonne that a cost-benefit analysis, the pros and cons, is absolutely a great idea. For everyone listening, in terms of Nano and the other coins that were mentioned, like Bitcoin Cash and XRP, the only coins I think I've ever mentioned on Evan's show here at WXXI Connections is Bitcoin BTC and Ethereum ETH. The network effects that are behind these coins, the way these technologies work, it's not about which coin is the cheapest or the fastest. It's about which coin has the most decentralization and the most network effect in terms of the number of users, because this is a technology and this has network effects. And us as human beings, we have a difficult time understanding exponential growth. And we are living in times of exponential growth where, in my opinion, and people like me and people there's going to be a lot of change right here. So, and I also have to say that the irony is killing me with not accepting Bitcoin for environmental, reasons. When you think about the environmental impact that any form of currency has, including U.S. dollars, And I would disagree with James that it was absolutely a bad idea for Yvonne not to accept, you know, the cryptocurrency just because of how much more I believe that you would be able to do if you would have, you know, if someone was able to accept these cryptocurrency payments, just like James was saying, put it on the balance sheet and then to, you know, take advantage of the scarce resource and the economic benefits as people are using this technology. This is a technology that people are using. Bitcoin isn't just a token. It's not just a currency. Real people all over the world, there's 7.5 billion people, and this is allowing many of them to participate in a financial system that hasn't before.
Gary is the owner and CEO of Minting Coins. Gary, thanks for making time for the program.
Thank you, guys.
James Harrington, CEO and founder of the Ugandan Water Project. Thanks for being with us, James.
Thank you so much.
Vinny Aliperti from Billsboro Winery on Seneca Lake. I'll see you soon, I'm sure, for a glass of wine.
Thanks, Evan. Yep, cheers.
Thank you, Vinny. And Yvonne Taylor, real quick, where can people learn more about what you're doing at Seneca Lake Guardian, Yvonne?
Thanks so much, everyone. I appreciate this healthy dialogue. Please go to SenecaLakeGuardian.org to find more information. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Thanks, Yvonne. More connections coming up in a moment.